Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Today on the Optus Sport Football Podcast, myself and Spanish football journalist Phil Kitromilidis are joined by former Leeds United striker Michael Bridges to take a look at the first international break of the season. Hunzi has been given the flick. The Socceroos aren't quite pitch perfect. And is Neymar better than Pelé? I don't think so. Anyway, I'm Mark Schwarzer and we'll be chatting all that and more on this week's Optus Sport Football Podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 6 of the Optus Sport Football Podcast. It's the international break and I'm joined, as always, by Phil Kitromilidis. So Phil, did you find yourself cheering for England or Spain this weekend? Or both?
It's a good question, Mark. Hello everyone. If listeners aren't necessarily aware of who I am, I was born and raised in London, but I've been living in Spain for the last 12 years. So it means that I might have dual allegiances when it comes to international football. But let me throw in another spanner into the works, is that my family's Greek and I was born and raised and I've got a Greek passport. And so I also cheer for Greece, mainly when it comes to international football, which is a shame because they lost 3-0 to the Netherlands. I think when England play Spain, if it happens, we'll see. We'll see who I cheer for. I've got a Spanish wife, a Spanish kid, a Spanish mortgage. So I'm pretty much invested in Spain. So it's nice to see England do well. But my heart often goes towards Spain. Yeah,
I think you better off sticking with Spain, mate, because I don't think Greece is going to do very much, mate. So anyway, someone who knows all about supporting as many teams as possible to give yourself the best possible chance of winning something, but still never does. Michael Bridges is also with us. How's it going, mate?
Yes, great to be back with you, Swartzy, after the World Cup, mate. I've missed you not. do you know what it is? Phil's answer there. When you're born in London, you've got a passport, you say you're going to cheer another nation on. It's absolutely shocking, Phil. I'm going to actually take you off the Christmas card list for that kind of shenanigans, mate. I am fully British. I support England. I've not once cheered on the Socceroos ever before. Isn't that right, Mark?
No, that is an absolute load of rubbish, because you do, and you do support the Socceroos when England are not playing, of course, and he's got about 17 football clubs that he supports as well. Like I mentioned in my intro there, he will support whoever he can support, and the thing about it is, Phil, he's useless, because all his teams never win anything, so he can't win anything. You would think all the teams he would support, he'd pick a team that could win something.
I know a thing or two about that, to be honest, but I don't know, it's like an interesting question, isn't it? Because when it comes to like international football, and it's not clear cut, is it now? Because people have different nationalities, people move nowadays, it's not as maybe clear cut as it was 20, 30, 40 years ago, and people born, raised and died in the same country I am from here, I support this national team. So like me, I'm the son of immigrants from a different country, born in a different country, and then I moved to a different country, so I've got sort of links to three different countries pretty strongly. So it's difficult for me to say I support England because I was born and raised in London, because I've got the Greek link and now I live in Spain. So it's not as black and white as it once was. Am I back on a Christmas list?
You certainly are, mate, because that's exactly what I do. I was just trying to put a spanner in the works, Phil. Me and you have got so much in common. It was just interesting, though, having both passports and living in both countries. You know, we're football fans. We just love the game. We love the culture and everything. I asked my daughter the other day, I said, you know, you've got passports, you've lived in Australia, now in England. She's become a Newcastle United fan since she's come back here. And I said, who would you play for if you had the opportunity? Would it be England or would it be the Matildas? And I was very surprised. She actually said, Dad, that is a shocking question. I would definitely play for the Matildas. So there you go. She's born in England, but had so long in Australia, she understands it. So there you go.
It's a personal thing. It's a personal thing, I think. I think you can't sort of dictate to someone how they feel. So if she felt like more strong link to Australia because she was born there, and that was what, then that's completely understandable, isn't it?
Yeah, for me, it's very simple. I mean, I without a doubt, support Germany. I mean, Socceroos, I mean. Anyway, let's talk about Germany since I brought that up. Obviously, they're having a disaster, have had a disaster for some time now. Hansi Flick is finally gone after a 4-1 defeat. I mean, his record has been horrendous if you look at it. In his last five games, he's lost four and drawn one. One was a draw against the Ukraine. They're lucky they've qualified by being actually the host of the Euros. Isn't that right, Bridgie? Otherwise, they wouldn't make it.
Swarty, I have been dying for this topic to come up because I know how much me and you have given each other stick over the years, and you've been all, oh, Germany this, Germany that. Mate, I honestly woke up this morning, saw the news, and I was devastated because I think Hansi Flick has been doing the most incredible job. I would have given him another 5-year contract, to be honest with you, mate, just to see how many points you didn't get going into the Euros as the host nation. So, no, but on a serious note, like you say, that
spoken like a true Englishman.
There you go, Phil. I've got to say, mind, Swarty, for me, it's the correct decision. Like you say, four wins in the last 17 in charge. And you think of his record when he took over at Bayern Munich and how successful he was. And we know they're a powerhouse in German football, but you've still got to manage that group of egos and the players. And he did such a good job. And he just hasn't been able to transform it onto the national team. And I think they've had to make that decision based on his results. And they do not want to flop being the host nation going into the Euros and getting in there. So for me, the correct decision, mate. I cannot wait to hear your take on it.
Well, yeah. It was a matter of time. As soon as I saw the result come in against Japan, it was like, he's got to go. There's no way in the world they can keep him. The first thing that came to my mind, obviously the first person I thought would possibly take over is Julian Nagelsmann. He's free. He's easy to take over. Which makes a lot of sense. The only problem I've got is with that, he's just got zero experience in international football. Very young. For me, I'm actually...
He's so young, isn't he? You can't have a guy that young going to an international dressing room, right?
I think you can. The only thing is... I know what you're saying. I just don't know. If the buy-in thing had gone really, really well, then I think it was a pretty simple thing that he'd gone... But then he wouldn't be available, right? So I'm sort of cancelling myself out by saying if the buy-in thing went really well, he wouldn't be in with a chance anyway because he would be still at Bayern. But then he'd have more credit, more kudos going into that Germany side. I think there's still question marks about him because of the way that it all ended with Bayern. So for me, the natural person to take over, I think, is Rudi Völler. I mean, he managed Germany before. He's there. He's got the respect because, I mean, he's one of the gods of German football. So I think, personally, that you wouldn't go too far wrong with the German FA actually installing Rudi Völler as the national team manager between now and the Euros.
And he's got to be German.
I think so. It's a strange
question,
one.
Great question, Phil. Love it.
I only think also because of the quality of German managers that there are around. I just feel that it's a bit like the Dutch. Why would the Dutch go elsewhere when they've got such a good pedigree of managers? Why would Spain go elsewhere when they've got really good pedigree of Spanish managers? And that's the kind of same thing with Germany. Germany have always produced good quality managers, so why would they go elsewhere? I think they would stick to a German manager. And I think, I just don't think it would actually be at this moment in time the right decision to bring someone else in who's not German.
Yeah, I guess Rudi Völler makes the most amount of sense given his profile, given his prestige, and given that he is there within the setup now. But you're right, Mark. Just as well, they're hosts of Euro 2024 because otherwise it could have been a little bit difficult. Where could people in Australia watch the forthcoming European Championships, Mark?
Of course, on Optus Sport. There's no other place you'd be able to watch it. It's exclusive and live on Optus Sport. Right. That's where we're going to be all watching, aren't we?
Just checking.
Yeah, thanks, Phil. Thanks for that lead, man. That's absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, Spain, obviously, not having the best of running in qualification just yet. I mean, they've got three games. After three games, they've had 6 points. They did beat Georgia last time round. They did lose to Scotland, though, didn't they? And Scotland are top of the group, and they are absolutely flying. They need to get a couple of more wins under their belt to make sure that qualification is right. And of course, they're going to have a change, which we all thought was inevitable, as the president of the Spanish FA.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot for us to break down here, Mark. I mean, we could talk about the football in just a moment. That 7-1 win against Georgia, which was really, really needed, given that they had lost to Scotland. Everyone's lost to Scotland. Scotland had this unstoppable juggernaut in Euro qualifying, which I'm not sure too many people saw coming. But kudos to them for absolutely taking this group by storm. But yes, last night we saw that Luis Rubiales finally stepped down as the president of the Spanish FA. He had been suspended by FIFA. He'd come out and told the General Assembly of the Spanish Federation a couple of weeks ago. You might remember he did his best Leonardo DiCaprio from Wolf of Wall Street impression, saying, "I will not quit. I'm not going. Said it 5 times. But he's realised that his position is absolutely untenable. He released a statement last night, which was not particularly repentant, didn't say sorry, didn't say I've committed any mistakes. He said, basically, they're all out to get me and I'm going to clear my name. I'm going to pursue justice and show that the truth will come out. This all after the unsolicited kiss with Jenny Hermoso, the Spanish player, in the celebration of the Women's World Cup final. So it's all spiraled out of that. He has finally gone. His position was completely untenable. He realised that. And now what he's saying is, I'm going to clear my name. So there's an interim president at the moment, a guy called Pedro Rocha. And there is still the same manager in charge of the men's national team, Luis de la Fuente. The man in charge of the women's national team, Jorge Vilda, who won the World Cup, he's also gone as well. So the president and the manager in charge of the Women's World Cup, who won the World Cup 3 weeks ago, they have both gone. So it's been a real revolution in Spanish football. And in terms of on the pitch, Spain beating Georgia 7-1. This was really needed, by the way, because we talk about pressure. We talk about Hansi Flick and his position being untenable. Luis Rubiales and all the fallout from that, and Luis de la Fuente applauding him when he was saying some really quite despicable things in that speech he gave to the General Assembly. He came under a lot of pressure. And this despite Spain winning the Nations League a couple of months ago with Luis de la Fuente at the helm. He was under big, big pressure going into this Georgia game. They come out, they won 7-1. They played extremely well. Lamine Yamal scored, and we spoke about him a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, this teenager for Barcelona. He's 16 years of age, became the youngest ever player to play for Spain. And he became the youngest ever player to score for Spain and in a Euro qualifier, 16 years and 50 odd days, scored the 7th goal. Really, really well taken goal. And he's a really exciting player and someone who we're going to be talking about a lot more in the future, I think. So there we go, Mark. I told you there was a lot to break down in terms of Spain.
But Phil, tell me though, I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued by Rubiales. Why was he so reluctant to leave? Why was he so adamant that he was? And how was he able to actually stay in the job for so long?
He was able to stay in the job for so long because it was actually quite difficult to get rid of him in terms of the machinations of the Spanish FA. He was suspended by FIFA, though, so they took it into their own hands. They said, right, he can't stay in charge at the moment. Why did he stay on so long? I genuinely believe that he thinks he's done nothing wrong. And it's a question of arrogance. It's a question of ignorant misogyny. He doesn't feel that he has abused his power. He insists that it was a consensual kiss. He insists that he asks Jenny Hermoso, shall we have a little kiss? And she says, yeah, okay. You know, even if that happened, which he says it didn't happen, even if that happened, a man in that position asking one of his essentially employees, shall we have a little kiss in front of the whole world? You can't be asking that question. You cannot be asking that question. And he still doesn't realize he's done something wrong. So yeah, he thinks it's a witch hunt. They're all out to get me. I'm going to clear my name. It's just, it's really quite extraordinary. It's a really, really sad, sad episode, which has highlighted a lot of things in terms of women in sport, in terms of women in Spanish society and beyond.
Mind blowing that Rubiales still believes he's done nothing wrong. Absolutely crazy. Bridgie, let's talk about Scotland. Would you have ever in a million years ever thought Scotland would be top of the group flying? And even more so, Scott McTominay, leading goal scorer currently in the Euro qualifiers.
It's absolutely incredible. When I saw the group, I'm thinking, you know, Scotland, Spain, Norway, it's going to be interesting to see who finishes behind Spain. But yet we are looking at this and Spain, the clean sheets that they have had, that's what's been spectacular. So I've just been up to Scotland over the last 3 days and it was quite, you know, humbling to get up there and hear everybody just talking about the national team, how well they are doing, the qualification. And I was speaking to John Carver. Now, he's the assistant coach, used to be at Newcastle United. I was speaking to John Carver. He's helping out Steve Clark. And I just said, JC, what's going on? And he just said, Bridgie, the preparation that we have put in, the players that have stepped up the plate, there is just this hunger and desire throughout this squad to go and succeed. And he said, there's only so much we can do as coaches when we go out there and say, you put on sessions, you put on patterns of play, you go through the analysis. He said, the players have still got to go out there and perform. And he said, it's been absolutely incredible to see the levels that these players have shown. Like you say, Scott McTominay, I would never put him in my fantasy league team because he gets you no points. But then for the national team, he's turned out to be an absolute goal-scoring machine. And he's been Mr. Reliable. Set plays, they've been dangerous. The impressive thing that they were happy with, John Carvey was saying, it's been the defensive shape that they have shown with the clean sheets that they have needed. However, he did say it's not over. There's some big games to come. But I think they're done and dusted now. They're going to qualify. And I'm delighted for them, actually, even though that's an Englishman saying that, I am delighted. I think the game against Spain and Norway on the 15th of October, that's going to be a huge one because I don't want to not see Norway. I'm going to come to you with this one, Swarty. I do not want to see Norway at the Euros because we're going to lose the likes of Haaland and Odegaard and two players that I'm loving watching play in the Premier League.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, that you look at Norway with Haaland and Odegaard, how good are players? I mean, they're two of the best players in the world right now, right? And Norway are having an absolute disaster. How is that even possible? I don't even understand. There's something fundamentally wrong with this Norway side that they can't get a competitive side out there if you've got Haaland and Odegaard in their side, Phil, surely.
I'm just going back to something that Bridgie just said. Do you really, you want England to win the Euros, right? So you don't want Haaland at the Euros. You don't want Odegaard at the Euros. You want San Marino, Lithuania, Faroe Islands. Then they've got the best chance possible.
Phil, listen to me. I'm more worried about McTominay than I am Haaland. Put it that way.
I know, yeah, right?
But Phil, you know what it is, though? Bridgie will find some sort of ounce of heritage from Scotland or Norway if they're in there, and then he could claim to be, supporting them as well. That's just what he does.
Mark, yeah, he lives pretty close, right?
Phil, absolutely. Phil, exactly. That far up, exactly.
Phil, yeah. You didn't know the story. Mark's trying to get me. I had the opportunity as a youngster at the age of 17 to play for England or Scotland. Now, my manager at the time was a guy called Peter Reid. Full-on Englishman. Obviously, Maradona tore his backside out for that World Cup goal, really still chasing him to this day. My youth team coach was Scottish, and it was a guy called Rick Sprazier. And I had to go in the office between the two of them, and there was a game against England-Scotland for the Euro qualifiers for under-18s up at Motherwell in 3 days' time. And they said, listen, you've been selected to play for both nations. Who do you want to choose? And Peter Reid said to me, if you don't pick England, you won't play for this club. And the Scottish coach, that was my youth team coach, said, well, Michael, if you don't pick Scotland, you won't play for the youth team. So you'll never make it as a footballer. And I was just left in this massive dilemma. And I had to go back to my roots. If I walked through my front door and said to my dad that I chose Scotland, I wouldn't have been allowed in the house. So I went for England. There you go.
Peer group pressure, mate. Peer group pressure at its finest. Let's move on to Socceroos. They played Mexico in a friendly in Texas. Firstly, we've got to talk about the pitch because this just does my head in. Playing games, we see it in preseason normally when Premier League teams, for example, or the big teams around Europe go and play these competitions. They go and out play these preseason friendlies in the US. Phil, what do they talk about in Spain preseason? Do they actually ever get brought up? Like the likes of Real Madrid or Barcelona, they go to America and they're playing on artificial pitches, or they're playing on pitches that had artificial pitches and they lay turf 3 days before the game. Because over here, it's mental. It's like, it's impossible. Why are they even playing on these pitches?
Yeah, I don't know where the Socceroos were playing. Apparently, it is Texas. It looked like a potato field in the middle of Idaho because it was a really terrible, terrible pitch. Like, you can't have two professional squads of football playing that on that kind of pitch, and the injuries will happen. And unfortunately for the Socceroos, they did happen. By the way, going to the US for Real Madrid and Barcelona has become absolutely mandatory every single summer. They will go. They need to spread the brand. They need to bring in money. It is a huge deal for them. So they will continue to go. I think they do need to put stipulations on the kind of pitch. So you're not going to see them play on really bad pitches. You're not going to see them play on artificial pitches because they simply won't do that because it's not worth getting an injury to one of their players. But yeah, going to the US and playing in preseason is absolutely massive for both of those teams economically. It's not one off now. It's every single summer they will go there and play various matches because it's very important.
Bridget, you got glass ankles, right? And imagine that playing on artificial pitches, right? I played preseason with Chelsea in the US, and we played, I think it was Inter Milan, and we played on a pitch that literally had been re-turfed 3 or 4 days before we played the game. It was a nightmare. Every time a player would push off, there'd be a big clunk of that bit of turf would just push away. I mean, surely there's got to be a point where players just go, no, I'm not. I mean, Messi in MLS refuses to play on any other pitch other than a grass pitch. So surely there's going to come a point where players are just going to go, no, we're not doing that anymore.
Well, there's a bit of a difference between me and Messi stipulating where we want to play. So there you go. If I said I didn't want to play, they wouldn't be bothered. But I do think that pitch, when I looked at it and I saw it, it almost looked like it was my... I remember getting a quilt or a doona off my grandma, and she just embroidered it all together, and it was like a bit of patchwork. And that's exactly what this thing looked like. It was shambolic, mate. Now, yeah. I think the amount of money that teams and clubs are paying for players these days, right? And if you're seeing your players go on international duty to go and play on something like that, I would be very worried as a club, thinking, hang on a minute, this could be a serious injury, because we don't know how much, how bad the Irvine injury is, or Jackson. Until, have you heard anything, Swartz, yet? Or are we still in the dark as to how bad that is?
I'm not sure as yet. And I'd be absolutely furious as a player going and knowing it. When you turn up, you're playing an international match and you turn up and the pitch is artificial. I'd be just going, what is this? This is like literally rag-ass Rovers.
Well, it's not.
It really is.
It's not the first time for the Socceroos. The Honduras qualifier game a few years back, I remember, was absolutely shocking. There was players putting their feet down and the turf was coming up. And that's exactly what we saw. So I was very surprised at this, that there hasn't been more said about this, because I think if it had been, a Kocha, the goalkeeper, or somebody that's got a world-class famous name, then they're doing serious damage. It wouldn't be the last we heard about it. So I think that pitch, international pitches, should not be at that standard, mate. And he asked a question about me. I think the worst experience I ever had, Mark, and you be able to relate to this, was when I first came to Australia and signed for the A-League. And I went to do a training session with the Newcastle Jets. And I said, what's that in the middle of the football pitch? And it was a lovely grass field, but in the middle, there was just this artificial 12-foot strip. And I went, what's that? They went, oh, that's a cricket square, where the people do the balls down. And I went, what's it doing in the middle of the pitch? They said, oh, well, you know, we share the pitch with them. And I'm thinking, hang on a minute, if I go up for a header off the grass and then I land on that, I'm doing some serious damage here. So I was flabbergasted. And that's probably the only time that I said to Branko Kalina, who was the manager at the time, I said, Branko, I'm sorry, mate, I'm going to train, but I am going to train, and you're not going to see me go and pick the ball up in the middle of the field, because that's ridiculously dangerous, pal.
So yes, it was a friendly, and we did draw 2-2 against Mexico, which on paper is actually a really good result away from home as well. But what can we take from the friendly, Phil?
Listen, I think there's a lot of positives to take from the friendly up against I think they're the number 12 ranked side in the world. And okay, the FIFA rankings aren't the be-all and end-all, but it gives you a pretty good idea that Mexico are a decent side. Very positive to go into a 2-0 lead, less positive to commit the defensive errors that maybe let Mexico back into the game. Young players coming in and getting a chance to play in the game. Overall, it's a positive experience. I just wonder, because the forthcoming Asian Cup games and World Cup qualifiers, it's going to be different for Australia, isn't it? Because they're going to have a lot more possession than they did against Mexico in those kind of games. So it's not, I don't know if necessarily the best preparation for those games, because they did perhaps lack a little bit of guile in the final third. So it's a good result against a strong international powerhouse. But in terms of preparation for those forthcoming games, I'm not sure how much you can take into that. Given the opponents are going to be slightly different in those forthcoming games. But I mean, Schwartz, do you know if Graham Arnold knows what his best 11 is? And does that coincide with your best 11?
I think he's got a good idea. I think when you look at, I think the core of the team, you know, when you, obviously Matty Ryan, Harry Suter, Kai Rolls, Nathaniel Atkinson, you know, Jackson Irvine, hopefully he's fit. We saw it at the World Cup. I think there is a core of that side that is still very much the same squad that were at the World Cup. I think Asian Cup, going to the Asian Cup, the performances of of the Socceroos at the World Cup with a squad of players that we've got, players coming back from injury, which I think Martin Boyle was huge for us. Seeing him back in the green and gold, seeing him score, I think was really important. I think he's a really important player for the Socceroos. Had we have had him at the World Cup, well, could have been a little bit different, because he just brings that little bit of different sort of fight spirit and a little bit of ability to what we've got in the squad. So I'm looking forward to seeing him fit as we saw against Mexico and continuing for the Asian Cup, because this is a big Asian Cup for us. We go in there as one of the, I mean, we always do, but I really have a good feeling about this side and about this group of players and about Graham Arnold in charge. And I think we've got a really good chance of going there and doing well.
That's what I was saying to you about potentially having to like practice against breaking down teams, because Australia's group is Uzbekistan, Syria and India in the Asian Cup. And those teams aren't going to be taking the game to Australia like Mexico, where they're going to be sitting back defending wildly and Australia have to find a way to break down those kind of sides. So that's what I was saying in terms of preparation for those kind of fixtures. This is a good way to see where you are maybe in terms of a World Cup and on a world stage, but in terms of preparation for the Asian Cup, what they're going to face there is going to be slightly different.
Well, we'll take a short break now and then we'll be back and we'll talk all things England, Italy and Brazil.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I mean, I'm actually really excited talking about England, because obviously we've talked about Germany and the disaster they're going through. England, it's not a disaster, right? They're top of the group. They've done well. However, Bridgie, what's going on with Gareth? When he took over as manager, he said, I'm going to pick players on form. I'm going to pick the best possible players I can pick to play for England. He seems to have done a complete 180, and all he does now is pick players based on what they've done for England and what they've done for Gareth as he's been a manager of England. Over the period of time since he's been in charge, what, the last 5 years? It's not right, is it?
Well, it's becoming, you know how they say, I'll never forget when the Vardy and Schmeichel in the tunnel, it was like, ooh, Danish friends, they take the mick. Well, now it's become, ooh, Southgate's friend. And if you're a Southgate friend, you're going to get a game for England. So I'm a big fan of Gareth Southgate because of what he's done with England over the major tournaments. He's made us believe once again. However, I've got to say that the more games we seem to play under Gareth Southgate, the more players I see, like Harry Maguire getting a game. Henderson, who's obviously left and gone to Saudi Arabia, similar to what you were saying, Swarty, about the players that are not playing in them competitive matches anymore. Like, how are you going to expect to lift your level for an international game? You know, I see players like Jared Bowen, Ward-Prowse, that are playing football and playing in the, you know, the best league in the world and playing regular and doing well, not getting an opportunity. And I'm dumbfounded at some of the decisions as to how and why when you play somebody like a Harry Maguire, that I think everybody at Manchester is thinking, oh, well, I'm pleased he's not playing for us at this moment in time because he's being so vulnerable, but he can yet play for England. So there's a lot of questions that Gareth has got to be accountable for and answer to as to why his, you know, I think one of his mantras when he said, you perform, you play well, you get picked. He's completely gone against his mantra and everything that he was saying, mate, because if you're saying that Harry Maguire and Henderson deserve to be in there, because Jude Bellingham, yes, he's flying at Real Madrid, Declan Rice doing wonderful things, Madison, yes, Harry Kane, Saka, no problems with them type of players, Chilwell. But there's a couple of omissions from that squad where I'm thinking the next game is vital, because if he doesn't decide to go with the players that deserve it, then the media and the vultures are going to come swooping for Gareth, and he's got a lot to answer for.
But is there not something to be said about loyalty to players that you've trusted? Like, I've trusted you. I still believe in you. You might not be right at the top of your game right now, but I still think that you have got something to give. So I am going to select you, and that will hopefully get you back in the group.
Yeah, no shadow of doubt. That does fantastic things for Harry Maguire, somebody he's got believing in him, because a lot of people don't believe in Harry Maguire at this moment in time. However, what it also does, it alienates you from other players that are now not getting selected, and they're going, well, Gareth Southgate can go and shove it because I'm going to go and perform for my team. And if he comes a knocking, then they, you know, the mindset of them players that are getting left out, it does them no favours whatsoever for Gareth Southgate.
Bridgie, what you're referring to Maguire and Phillips, for example. Neither of them have started a game for their club. So how do you justify picking players that don't play for their club? That's the big question, right? I think there's an argument to say that Jordan Henderson can be involved in that squad. Absolutely, because he's only just gone across to Saudi. He's playing week in, week out. The argument is, okay, what level are you talking about now, right? And we're talking about England and we're talking about the Premier League, which is the best league in the world, and the abundance of players you have in the Premier League, right? I know, Phil, you're laughing. I know there's an argument to say, well,
Why I'm laughing? Because I'm laughing. I remember Neymar saying now the Saudi League is actually better than Ligue 1.
Yeah. Than French League. Well, so that means...
obviously tongue-in-cheek from him because he's just left the French League.
But the Ligue 1 is no longer in the top five leagues. So there may be, what, seventh in the world, maybe, Saudi League now? I don't know. Look, this is the thing. I agree, right? So I have a problem with him picking Maguire and Phillips, and it's not personal. It's more about the fact they're just not playing. So they're delighted because Harry Maguire is getting match practice with England. I mean, that, if you think about it, that is absolutely crazy that a player at a European qualifier is getting match practice playing for England, not for his club, because he just doesn't get selected. Calvin Phillips is the same. And you mentioned there Ward-Prowse. I mean, what else does this guy need to do to get a chance to play in England or be in an England squad? Sterling. I mean, if you want to talk about Sterling's, obviously, start to the season has been outstanding. So how does that not justify him being selected again for the national team? That's what I find really difficult to understand. And I also think Gareth has this thing of, I think, knowing Gareth as well, is that it's about squad harmony. It's about the mix of the group. And I think he's very comfortable with those players and the atmosphere and the group that's being created from those players being involved. And he runs the risk of, if he changes it, changing the dynamics of the group. And I think for a lot of managers these days, that is a big, big issue. And I agree to a degree as well, but it's England and you've got an abundance of players. You can't be picking Maguire and Phillips right now.
I don't know. There's your answer, maybe, talking about the harmony in the squad. International football is so difficult. You've got these players only for a short amount of time as well. I mean, picking people that you know, that you like, that you get on well with, that you think can deliver for you, I don't see too much of a problem with it. I get what you're saying, and on paper it might seem a little bit ridiculous, but if you scratch the surface and what you were saying, Schwartzy, about knowing Gareth and knowing how he operates and how he works, then he thinks these are the best players for me, for my team, for what I want from this group. Maybe you can understand it a bit more thinking it like that.
I buy that if you go into a tournament. I'm more on board with that into a tournament. We're talking 8-9 days together. We're not talking
the tournament. Idea is to get to a tournament, though.
Well, no, absolutely, but they're flying, right? And you surely, I know you can't chop and change every week, but we're talking about players that are not playing for their club. I understand. We're not talking about players who are playing every week and maybe not playing as well. Then there's still an argument to say, look, I'm going to stick with players that I know have done it and always play well. Jordan Pickford's a great example. He was playing week in, week out at Everton, not playing well, didn't play well for probably 12 to 18 months with his club side, but still was getting picked for England because playing for England, he never let Gareth Southgate down, nor did he ever let England down. So I understand that argument. The argument I don't get is the Maguire Phillips being called up when they don't play any games for their, or they don't start any games for their club. That's the problem.
There was also, I mean, I remember when Luis Enrique was in charge of Spain, and he got a lot of stick because his squad selection was, for some people, quite left field. But his explanation was, I am not picking who I think are necessarily the best players. I'm picking the best players for what I want to do, for how I want my team to play. And he got a lot of stick for selecting Eric Garcia, for example, at centre-back. But he was a manager that wanted the ball to be played out from the back. So he thought Eric Garcia is the kind of centre-back that I need to play in my team, who wasn't getting game time at Barcelona or whatever, but he was being called up because he was specifically the kind of player that Luis Enrique wants. So there might be something to that as well. So Gareth's thinking, I want these players. I think these specific players can do a job for me in that position, irrespective of whether there are other players who are playing more or maybe playing at a higher level for their club, But when they come here to my team, to how I want this team to play, I think these players are better for my team.
Yeah. Well, breaking news here, Swartzy. I agree with you for once.
So the question is there, Bridgie, is that, is it loyalty or is it stupidity? And is it getting in the way of developing players and developing this team even further? Because we seem to have hit, or England have seemed to have hit, a little bit of a roadblock in terms of their development. Are they now developing under Gareth Southgate? Are they just so predictable these days?
Is it loyalty? Is it stupidity? It for me, the selection of the squad is stupidity, because the Calvin Phillips one and the Maguire one is it's a head scratcher. But the difference is the other day against Ukraine, right? It's 1-1. We're looking for something to happen off the bench. It's not like England don't have something off the bench to try and win the game, because Rashford came on, Foden came on, Gallagher came on. So there was players out there that can impact games. So the squad have been able to change the dynamics of a game. You've got a plan B. Yes, that was there. However, like you're saying, the stupidity of that can bring a lot of disharmony into a tournament, like you were saying. But in an 8-day window, when you're with a team, surely the players like Jared Bowen, who's been on fire, like Ward-Prowse, to give them some game time to actually see them, or just get them in and around the group to see how they act and integrate with the players. Are they bad eggs? I don't know. I don't know them personally. But are they good footballers? Yes, they are. And are they playing good football this moment in time? Yes. So if you're asking me the question, Gareth Southgate, it was stupidity that he's done that. And the stumbling blocks are kind of coming, because that Ukraine game wasn't really convincing. However, we're going up against Italy are really, really struggling in that group. Ukraine have shown that they have definitely got something where they can offer it and get out of this group, and England couldn't find a way to break that down. But that the argument for me, Swartzy, is them selections inside the squad is, absolute stupidity.
Let's move on to Italy. Italy played against North Macedonia, which, on paper, you would think Italy are going to win that game. And of course, Italy have done what Italy have been doing recently, faltering. We've got a tweet from regular Optusport reporter Adriano Del Monte, and he says, history will always keep us relevant, but Italy are no longer a powerhouse. League in decline for 15 years, ancient stadiums, we don't develop players, and are a mess at international level. Problem runs deep, but nothing is done about it. Lose to Ukraine Tuesday, Euro 24 is gone. Is that what we're thinking from looking from outside in at Italy, Phil?
Yeah, it's been in decline, but I wouldn't say that's because of Serie A itself. North Macedonia did actually beat Italy, didn't they, last year in the World Cup playoffs? So it wasn't perhaps such a surprise to see them frustrate them again. And the thing is, when Italy come around and they play international football, and you look at the starting 11, for me, I had this realization maybe about 6-7 months ago. I was looking at the team, I was like, oh, I don't actually know too many of these players. And I guess it's because they all play in Serie A. Like, if you look at them, they all basically play in Serie A, which maybe that's what Adriano Del Monte was getting to, that because they're all there and the league isn't flourishing like the Premier League, that has had a detrimental effect on the national team.
But Canada, that is, right? We had three Italian teams in the European Cup finals last season, Bridgie. So it can't be that much in decline.
Swartzy, let's be honest. We both know Adriano, and we both know how passionate this guy is. We've watched him. I think we actually had a player cam on him during some matches that you were working with him. And we instead of focusing on the managers, it was just basically on him. Because he's so animated, you know what I mean? So I reckon this comment that he's come out with has literally been in the referee's blown his whistle, and he's just put that tweet out, like, literally there, it's Macedonia, it's 1-1, this is a whole, it's a load of rubbish, what's going on? And he's just gone on a massive, massive rant. When he calculates it, as Phil has just done there, it's not that bad. I mean, you'd think that the nation...
I mean, they did win the last Euros. They did win the last Euros. But they are the reigning European champions.
They're still a huge force in football, no doubt about it. And I'm flabbergasted, to be fair, because I'm still laughing. I can just see him writing his tweet out, and he'd be going absolutely ballistic.
But that's unlike an Italian to be emotional, right? And we all know what football's like and what football does bring out in people, right? However, you say that. Are they still a big force? Yes, they are current European champions, right? No doubt about it, right? And they were very good at the Euros. But they've failed to qualify for the last two World Cups. So how can you class a team, a country, as still a big force when they can't qualify for the World Cup?
Because they've got a trophy in the trophy cabinet.
I mean, I said it was...
No, but hang on. Sorry, but Bridgie, you can't talk about history, right? I know they're the current European champions, but you can't go on back and go, well, okay, but look at the trophy.
This is recent history.
No. You've just contradicted yourself. No, recent understand. History. It's a bloody trophy. They've won the Euros.
No, I understand that. I understand that. But I'm talking about even like World Cups. Now I'm talking about the World Cup, right? So how can you be classed as a great if you can't qualify for the last two World Cups? Yes, I know you've won the European Championships, which is a massive ordeal. It's a massive thing, right? But do you still get classed as one of the big heavyweights in football if you can't? Have you not qualified for the last two World Cups? It's 32 teams, right? It's not like it's 24 teams where it's really tough to qualify for a World Cup. There's 32 teams.
Listen, they are basically, right, they've had three matches in this group stage, right? They've got, England have had five. Ukraine have had four. They've got games in hand, right? It is not all doom and gloom. I'm telling you, I'm putting it out there now, right? Talk about you missing two World Cups and all the rest of it. They are current European champions, okay? It's not as bad as what Adriano has said. This team, Italy, will get through in second place. Italy are still a more world powerhouse than England. There you go, I've said it. Because they've got trophies in their cabinets. We haven't won anything.
Of course they are. Of course they are.
I think historically, yes. And I know they've won the World Cup. Okay, I know. The anomaly with Italy right now is winning that European Cup. Because if they... I think there'd be a zero argument having here. If Italy hadn't won that Euro, you'd be both agreeing with me saying, no, they're no longer. They're no longer a powerhouse. The fact that they've won that, but not qualify for
what? If they hadn't won the major international tournament.
Well, it's not the major, it's a European one. Yeah, I know, don't get me wrong. I know it was huge, right?
I mean, they've come third. Italy have come third in the last two Nations Leagues as well. So they made the final four in the last two Nations Leagues. They've come third in both of them. They're the reigning European champions. They won the World Cup in 2006. They're definitely
Phil, this is great, right? Because
even if this qualifying isn't great.
This is great, Phil, because we have a lot of Italian Optusport listeners. There's a lot of them in Melbourne, and I'm just loving fueling the fire with Sporty because he is not going to be welcome back when he goes to Melbourne.
No, I want to know from these listeners, the Italian listeners, are Italy still classed as a world powerhouse? I want to know. Ooh. My old club that I played in Australia, Club Marconi, they're massive diehard Italian fans. I want to know, do you still class yourself as a powerhouse in football?
And as we speak, they are taking your picture down off the wall.
Talking about absolute superstars, let's move on to Brazil, right? And I'm referring to Pelé here, right? So he scored 77 goals for Brazil, all-time leading goal scorer, but that record has just been surpassed. I don't know. This actually, I'm very, very indifferent about this. Neymar is now the leading goal scorer for Brazil on 79 goals. Is that right, Phil?
I mean, it's right because that's how many goals he scored. I mean, what do you mean, is that right? What's wrong about it?
I don't know. I just find it difficult to feel that Neymar is the all-time leading goal scorer for Brazil. If you think about who's played for Brazil, what he hasn't accomplished in the game of football compared to predecessors, I don't know. Maybe it's a bit of nostalgia there. And obviously, I'm a massive Pelé fan.
Phil, this comes back to goalkeepers union against strikers union. Goalkeepers don't like strikers. Neymar's broken one of the probably world's greatest players, broke a record. And yet a goalkeeper is dumbfounded to say he can't recognise it. This guy deserves all the credit he can get, in my opinion. As much as I don't like his antics, and I think this is what you might be referring to, Sporty, he is not the most likable player to watch when he does his antics and he fakes injuries. However, he's a joy to watch when he's in full flow. He's a defender's nightmare. He's a goal-scoring machine. And the record that he has broken, he should be held in the highest regard. I've actually got a Pelé signed shirt on my wall here. I'm just about to replace it and see if I can order a Neymar one. So there you go. That's how good and that's how well he has done.
Shame on you.
Listen, I think I know what Mark is getting at. I think I know what you're getting at, Mark. It's because he's never won anything with Brazil. I think that's what it is.
All the
iconic Brazilian players that you think of in the past and all the World Cups that they have won, and Copa Americas as well, and all this success that they've had playing a certain way. I mean, Neymar is the sort of archetypal Brazilian forward. He can do everything. He is skillful. He is fast. He does tricks. He plays with a smile. He scores goals. Everybody should love him, and he should be elevated to iconic status throughout history, but he has never achieved anything with Brazil. He obviously has won many Ligue 1s with Paris Saint-Germain. He won a lot of stuff he won two leagues with Barcelona. He won one Champions League as well. So maybe his terms of legacy at club, it could have been better. It's not going to get any better now at El Hilal, certainly not in the European context. But anyway, what I'm saying is, I think you feel like that because you've not seen him achieve important things with the national team. And if you'd seen him lead Brazil to a World Cup, or even if he just danced around everyone and they'd won a Copa America and it had been amazing, then that might have felt like, yeah, okay, this guy's the rightful owner of this really prestigious title of the top scorer in the history of the Brazil national team. Because he's never done that, I can sort of understand that, it's not Ronaldo. Oh, it should be Ronaldo, or it should be Pelé, or it should be someone else who we associate with Brazilian success. And Neymar is not that player.
Yeah, it's a bit unfair. It is unfair on Neymar to question the goal scoring fate, and you got to take your hat off to him because that is remarkable. I hold my hands up and I apologize to Neymar on that. But has he underachieved through his career, Bridgie? Surely, yes, I think yes. He's completely. Yes, I think yes. Massively underachieved.
Yeah, massively underachieved. So I was absolutely delighted that Argentina won the World Cup, not for Argentina, but for Messi. And, you know, that was him. He's completed football. So that was a huge, huge moment. And that's why I hold him in such, you know, like the ultimate. Neymar, he definitely underachieved for the fact that I think he, well, like Phil has just mentioned, the World Cups and things like that he hasn't had the success of previous superstars of Brazilian football when they've won things. However, on the other side of that, I've seen Messi do it for years at his club level as well with Barcelona. Phil mentioned he's had two with Barcelona and then going to play for Paris Saint-Germain. You're going to win everything anyway because you've got the best players. So I don't think he's really challenged himself. And he's taken, like, I look at the likes of, in my generation, Ronaldo had done it in several different leagues, being the ultimate scorer. I'd done it for, you know, just a goal scoring machine across many different countries and continents. And as is Messi that we've seen. So I hold them in higher regard at club level and for international trophies, should we say. But when you're talking about beating Pelé's record, that cannot go unnoticed because Pelé is being arguably the world's greatest player. And I, you know, we never had the luxury of seeing him play live. You see all the clips and things, but, you know, to think what Neymar has done, it's outrageous.
And he's been injured as well. He's had injuries for large swathes of his career. I mean, he would have broken this record ages ago had he not been injured and missed international tournaments. And okay, also he's had questionable personal lifestyle choices, which have maybe impeded his development and success as a professional. And maybe that word professional, he's not been the most professional player. But in terms of talent and in terms of individual performance and abilities, he's been one of the best players that I've ever seen live in the last decade and a half, because we've seen him do some truly exceptional things. And, you know, he's got this record and he's going to add to it as well. He's only 31. Okay, he's playing for Al Hilal, but he's only 31. He's going to keep playing for Brazil and he's going to keep adding to this record, which is going to take a while to get beaten.
So, Phil, quickly, finally, I'm both going to ask both of you the same question. Phil, you start with you. Is he considered as one of the greats of football, Neymar?
He's considered as someone who... He really should be considered as one of the greats for his ability. I mean, it's difficult to talk about someone being considered as one of the great while they're still active. He's still 31. There is still time for him to win a World Cup. There is still time for him to win a World Cup. He is only 31. We saw the redemption story with Messi. So you're asking me quickly, is he considered one of the greats of football? Possibly not at the moment. And then at the end of his career, seeing what he's done, maybe. But when you talk about greats, Bridgie, I know you've got a head in your hands here. When we talk about greats, we're talking about people who have achieved, not just the most talented. If you ask me, is he one of the most talented players you've ever seen? Yes, course he is. But talent is not enough. To achieve greatness, you have to achieve stuff with that talent. And he has not achieved enough. One Champions League title, two La Ligas and five Ligue 1s. He got a gold medal at the World Cup, or at the Olympics. He got a gold medal at the Olympics. But that's not enough for me to achieve greatness.
He has just beaten the greatest player in history's record for the national team. He has got to go down as a great.
Wow. Your bar is obviously not very high, Bridgie.
Please don't get me rattled this morning. Honestly, do not get me rattled. He's just beaten Pelé's record. Do you not realise what this guy has just achieved? Like, you're talking about the world's greatest player and how many goals he scored. He's done it. He's done it, lads.
Bridgie, if you played for Brazil up front, you would break his record as well. In today's world, many games they play and how good this Brazil side is, you would as well.
Well, I'll tell you what, I can't see Richarlison beating that record, but we're talking about the goal scoring record of Neymar, and I'm putting it out there that for me as a striker, knowing how hard it is to hit the back of the net and find the back of the net, to do it for National 11 and beat Pelé, man, he's got to be classed as one of the greatest. So sorry, you two, the Strikers Union on this one, I'm going against you.
He missed a penalty as well.
But the thing, exactly. But the thing is, I was going to say to you, Phil, you mentioned about Messi and Messi winning the World Cup, and it's all about winning stuff as well as being a great player, and that created greatness. I still think all of us would have agreed, had even Argentina not won the World Cup, you'd still say Messi is one of the greatest. As you say with Cristiano Ronaldo, had they have not won the World Cup, they'd still be classed as one of the greatest ever to play, right?
Yes, absolutely. But then there would have always been that slight... I think what was important for Messi was to win the Copa America when he won it a couple of years before, because there would always been that question mark with Messi. He never led his national team to achieve greatness. And obviously, when you're Argentinian and you're wearing the number 10 and you're living in the shadow of Diego Maradona, obviously, and Maradona did what he did for the national team, the big thing for Messi was to lead his team to his national team to glory, and they did it in the Copa America on a small scale, but it was really important for him, and the emotional outpouring after they won, that was enormous. And then to do it at the World Cup was just exceptional. So I'm talking about greatness, man. We're talking about, think of the millions of footballers who have played across the history of this game over the last century. And we're talking about the top 10 of all time. There have been so many talented players, but to get into the all-time hall of greatness of the most amazing players, you need to have had that talent. And like Ronaldinho, is Ronaldinho one of the greatest players of all time? No, because he didn't achieve and maximize his potential. He was unbelievably fun to watch and so skillful, but he wasn't one of the greatest of all time. Is Ronaldo Nazario one of the greatest of all time? Yes, because he won a World Cup with Brazil and he was one of the greatest strikers and finishers. So I don't want to be that guy, but I think trophies are important when we're having this conversation.
But you are being that guy.
I am.
Quick one, Swartzy, before you wrap us up, a quick one off the back of that one. Both of you to give us an answer, and you can put this one out on socials as well. My kids use the term the GOAT in different sports. It's all around the greatest of all time. In my opinion, for me, Messi is the greatest of all time. So Phil and Swartzy, I want you to give us yours, and then I'm going to see if that can go out because I want the debate settled.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of footballers, let's call Messi the GOAT and invite the social media pylon.
Yeah, I think there's a combination. I think you can say one of the GOATs because I think there's a number of ones. So for me, the GOAT of all GOATs is Pelé. But then also I agree. Messi is definitely one of the GOATs. I agree. I think there's numerous GOATs. And I think for me, the greatest GOATs, the godfather of GOATs, has to be Pelé.
So that's why you're upset that Neymar's broke his record and you were saying, oh, I can't believe this has been done because
there's that as well.
You've just answered
There is that as well. But I also am a little bit surprised that Pelé only scored 77 goals for Brazil. I actually thought that record would have been higher, but yeah.
There were a lot less games, weren't there?
That's right. So, that's exactly right. So what was yours, Phil? What are you saying? The GOAT of all time?
Yeah, Messi, man. Messi. I'm sorry for everyone on social media who's going to start questioning that, but it happens.
No, but Phil, it's more our generation. You know, it's our generation, Phil. We've seen him. Swartzy's obviously, his generation playing against Pelé and things like that. That's where he saw most of the games.
Well, I'm not going to bite on that. That's all we've got time for today. Thanks a lot, guys. See you next week, Phil. And thanks a lot, Bridgie, for joining us.
Brilliant. Great to see you again. Yeah. Thanks, Phil.
A reminder that every game of the Premier League and La Liga is live on Optus Sport, with European qualifiers also on at the moment, and the FA Women's Super League returns next month. And it is a great opportunity to see the Matildas back in action for their clubs. Thank you for your company on Optus Sport Football Podcast. See you next time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.